Alive today with members of the Sayers family. I just want to say a massive thank you. If you want to introduce yourself.
I'm Tony Sayers Senior, Paul, and it's nice to meet you.
Albert Sayers, Uncle Albert.
Uncle Albert, everybody calls him Uncle Albert.
Guys.
Not the guy on the television, by the way.
Where's so sorry?
Stepdown son, Uncle Albert, yeah. Oh, do you know what? I remember I was down at Bushy Park, you know Bushy Park in London?
Yeah, of course.
Because you've got roots from London, right?
East End of London.
So I was going through Bushy Park when I was younger, and Uncle Albert was sitting on the pub that's inside Bushy Park,
right,
next to the maze.
Right.
And he was just sitting on the pub outside on his own, just having a drink. First celebrity I ever seen.
Which Uncle Albert was that?
I don't know, the one with a big grey beard.
Yeah.
Off Buster Merrifield. Yeah. Is that the guy? Of Only Fools and Horses?
Yeah.
That's the guy, Uncle Albert.
How many Uncle Alberts is there?
Oh, do you know what? I don't even know.
He was a boxing champion years ago in the army, he was.
No way, really?
Yeah, he was. I just watched something on TV about him last week.
Oh, send me the link to that. Buster
Merrifield, he was called.
He was a bank manager.
He was a bank manager, but he was a boxer in the army. He was a champion boxer in the army.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 100%.
They all claim to be champion boxers.
There's photographs of him. Trust me.
Legit,
look on YouTube.
Yeah.
Buster Merrifield.
Send me the link to that.
His real name, I forget his real name, slips me for the minute, but Buster wasn't his proper name, obviously. But he was a boxing champion he was in the Navy or in the Army or something years ago. True story, that.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Actually, mentioning Fools and Horses, which was a fantastic comedy, it was very real life, you know, because it's all family, that's all family.
Yeah.
You know, ducking and diving, trying to get a few quid. An exaggeration with Del Boy and what have you, but it was the same scenario, you know, like everybody's skint, we've got to go out there and get a few quid. Mm-hmm. We're not educated, we don't read or write very well, we haven't been sent to a good school, and you guys got to go on them streets and get a few quid, and it takes a lot of intelligence to do that, you
100%.
Know?
100%, I'm with
you.
You
know, because you got to work on your wits and you know, you got to see things that other people don't see.
100%.
But it was one of the only comedies that makes me laugh because I'm in there somewhere, you know.
Yeah, but I guess it's one of them ones because you've been on the street trading from way back when, seeing something that you can relate to is always like, you either laugh. See with me, I'm a tattoo artist by trade, right? So when I see these tattoo shows, I think to myself, it's not done like that.
Yeah. Not at all.
It's like, you wouldn't do that. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
So they quite frustrate me. So I tend not to watch them too much, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess with Only Fools and Horses, they were guys from the street who wrote
We see lots of similarities in there.
Yeah.
Because I think when I was a 10-year-old kid, we had Rodney's Job, where we used to keep me and my cousins, all relatively the same age, all kept toot, which was keeping our eyes open for the old bill. And back in them days, Paul, the police didn't wear them helmets they wear today. They used to wear them flat hats that used to what they wear in Scotland or Glasgow, Edinburgh, them type.
They changed them over, didn't
that's
they?
That's correct. I forget what year that was.
The hats were too heavy to wear when they're walking.
So they had these flat ones, and you have to keep your eyes open for the old bill when the old bill come. But back in the day, but if we start at the very start where we come from, i.e. the Sayers family. I mean, me and my cousin wrote a book, a history book. Not a crime book, but a history book called The Breed Apart, which is for sale in the shops today.
But what made you want to go and write a book?
Well, my cousin had the idea years ago, and made a few notes years ago, and I think just before lockdown, we got our heads together, and he says, do you fancy writing a book? I've had a little idea, spinning around my head for years, so we used to have a bottle of wine at the house, and have a cheeky little spliff, and it just opened your mind a little bit. And we says, Edward, so we wrote some stories down. And Eddie went back home. Eddie's mum's still alive.
Yeah.
My Aunt Mary, God bless her, and she's nearly 90 years old, and she was a mine of information, telling me stories about the old days. She's actually my godmother. She was there when I was born, 56 years ago, in a house up in the West End of Newcastle. So
she
was a mine of information. She's still got all her marbles. Doesn't suffer any kind of real illnesses, you know what I mean? So she was a mine of information regarding that and lots of other stories. I mean, we've put the story in there. I don't want to put a spoiler alert on it, but there's a story in there about when Reg Cray come to Newcastle, because there's been so many different people's opinions on that.
Yeah.
And her husband was there, my uncle Eddie was actually there. It was a shitty Tuesday night. There's only two, three people in the club. Reg Cray's come to the door with a couple of pals. and they got knocked back. It was as simple as that. They didn't get chased. They didn't get sent away. Anybody went and running after them with bags of money. They just says, you're not getting in. You're not members. So this is right, fair enough. They got the train back to London. There was anybody got chased. You'd be a fool to chase the Crewe twins, Paul, because you don't know what retribution would come back on you. Do you know what I mean? But yeah.
It's crazy with the craze. When you bring that up, like from all the podcasts that I've done throughout different towns, like they didn't just stick to London. Yeah. They tried to branch out,
but unsuccessfully. If I'm being honest, I mean, you get to hear tales now. There was lots of firms in London. Hundreds of firms.
Yeah.
So they were like big fish in a little pond. Can I say that? But like I said, to start at the start, Paul, where there was a bit of history goes back. We've always had, Albert boxed years ago. He was a boxer as well.
Yeah.
His older good looking boxer.
He never got hit much. His older brother, my uncle Frankie. Frankie was a boxer as well. I'm not sure what weight he was. It was lightweight or welterweight?
Featherweight.
And he was a professional boxer, Frankie.
We've got a nephew who's boxing now, Murray says.
And we've got a nephew now who's boxing, Murray. He's a cruiserweight.
But we're putting the card before the horse here, because that happened later in life. To write a book, you've got to have a story. It's not everybody can write a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So starting from the beginning, like our family came up from my land in London, and we were all street traders by trade, you know. We weren't educated.
Hawkers.
You know, we're street traders, and my great-grandmother, my grandmother, and that was the way we were all taught. We weren't sent to school, basically, to get a good education. There's no lawyers in our family.
No, doctors and dentists.
There's no, you know, we're not educated people, but we live sort of on our wits, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's all about survival, and the book goes back and tells you how it evolved, you know. People don't realise that up till 81 it was illegal to sell on the streets of anywhere, in Newcastle, Manchester, or even London. You had to have, they didn't give you a licence, they just nicked you. If you didn't pay your fines, they sent you to prison, you know.
What stuff was you selling?
Whatever you were selling, our family were fruit traders, you know.
Yeah.
And my grandmother, she went to prison in 1939, fighting for legalization of sites in Newcastle. My mother went to prison, my aunties, cousins. I went to prison in 71 because we just wouldn't pay the fines that were given to us for trading illegally.
Yeah.
And then in 81, we managed to convince the city council and the authorities to give us a license. And so from 81, we've been trading illegally. But it was a hard fight, that, you know what I mean? It wasn't easy.
You go from selling fruit, you end something that you can hold on to for a couple of days. Once you've got what you've got,
well, I mean,
you have to sell it.
You've got to remember, you know, the old Bill used to take right liberties with us. It wouldn't be allowed today. I mean, they used to throw us in the... Like, if you were trading illegally, they'd come and they'd throw you in the back of the van, take you down to the police station, lock you up for 4 or 5 hours, give you a backhander, you know what I mean? It was all that kind of thing.
You can imagine what prisons were like back then, Paul. Back in them days, when your granny going to, or your mom going
39,
to prison.
Can you imagine? 1939, for a woman to be in prison.
Mm.
That was... I mean, when I was in 71, it was bad.
Was there all women's jail there? Or was it like sections on one side, women?
Yeah,
on the
other, there would have been, but having said that, in them days prisons were pretty bad they're pretty bad places now. But in them days it must have been really, really terrible.
Well, now you've got like heating, you've got electric, you've got all of the above.
We've got TVs.
Telephones, TVs, everything. Yeah, back then I guess if you did have heating on, that would only be for a certain amount of time.
That's
and then by the time you woke up in the morning. Because I know there was a lot of pneumonia back then with people that were in prison.
Yeah, that's right.
Especially for your winter.
I mean, you know, there were just bad conditions, you know. I mean... people just don't believe that these things happened, you know.
You know, with every family, and you got to remember, you've got a family name that's powerful, strong.
Yeah, very.
Now, I used to live in Sunderland years ago, and I'd heard about you guys.
Yeah.
I met you first. I had the conversation with you. Saying that I wanted a podcast, Jeff, from the get-go.
I didn't want to do it, Paul, if I'm being honest. I've never done a podcast before, if I'm being honest. Yeah. And I kind of went
home.
He's
a shy guy, didn't speak.
I kind of went home and I thought, you know what it is, I can tell you at the very start, which is where I really wanted to start today, was back in the early 1800s, there was a guy named Tom Sears who actually became the heavy, back in the day, I'm talking about the 1840s, he's actually buried in Highgate Cemetery and he's a famous prize bare-knuckle prize fighter from back in the day, and he was born in Brighton and moved up to London's East End back in 18...
That's the guy I told you to Google and have a look at him.
He was the smallest heavyweight there's ever been. There was no weights back then, if you know what I mean. I think he was 10 and a half stone or something, but game as a pebble, and he fought a guy called... John Heenan, who was nicknamed the Benisher Boy.
In those days... You had a champion of America and a champion of England, and that was it. And the two of them fought for the heavyweight championship of the world, and they fought to a draw. The two of them were given championship belts, you know.
And the guy, he said that he was the hardest fighter he's ever fought.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And back then, they fought at Farnborough, in April 10th. I don't know, I remember this, April 10th. But I remember getting the newspaper, the Sunday Sun, in 2010, Paul, back in the day. And that very same day, I think Holyfield was fighting Mike Tyson. And it says, forget about this fight. Exactly 150 years ago today, Tom Sears fought this guy called John Heenan. And that was exactly to the day, 150 years ago. And it was bare knuckle. And when I told you who was actually at the fight, Charles Dickens was at the fight. Lord Byron, all these people were at the fight. And after the fight, I'll tell you who was there as well. The Marquess of Queensbury was there. And these two guys fought for 2.5 hours for 75 rounds. And the faces were unrecognisable. You can Google this, man. You can have as photos on. You can Google it, mate. And if you look at this, you see they were unrecognisable. And the Marquess of Queensbury says, this is not good. From then on, they wore gloves. So that was one of the last. I think John L. Sullivan was the last actual bare knuckle fight. But the Marquess of Queensbury was there, and he made the rules up that when you went down, because I think the rounds weren't rounds then. If you got hit in the stomach, you went down. You were after
a couple of. You get a little breather.
You got a breather, and you were back up again. So 70, they classed that as a round. But fighting for 2.5 hours, Paul, was a hell of a thing. And I think both them guys died very young. I mean, people didn't drink water back then, you know. You could catch typhus or any cholera from the water.
Yeah.
So they drunk gin and they drunk alcohol. And I think Tom Sears died at 38 years of age. And when he died, he had a funeral that was the size of a royal funeral. Like one of the, you know, as if royalty had passed away. There's thousands of people there. And I think they both died of alcohol poisoning, roughly about the same age, was about 38 years of age.
And alcohol would have been a lot purer back then.
Yeah,
it was.
Well, back in them days, Paul, people used to drink gin, bathtub gin, because it was clean, and alcoholism was rife, and that's why it's called Mother's Ruin. Because the mothers used to drink it as well, and everybody was pissed.
But it goes to prove a point, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, does it? Because we've got fighters in our family even then. And it's came right through to today when we've got a nephew who's fighting.
Yeah, he's boxing today.
But, you know, if you look at families, like if you go to Manchester, you go to London, the things that you'll always see in our kind of families, there's always boxers in the family. Mm-hmm. There's always fighters in the family because it's part of survival, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a form of survival, you know what I mean?
100%.
And it shows itself up. Any of the big families, if you look at the Cray family, they were boxers. Mm-hmm. Tibbs family, the Nash family in London. Oh, there's always boxers there, you know what I mean? Because it was a way of surviving, really.
Yeah.
And I
think you're getting a bit of respect for that uncle as well, don't you? You're getting a bit of respect for that as well.
You know, it takes a game, man, to get it. You go into the ring once, and you get hurt, you don't go again. But a man who goes back and he goes back and he goes back, he's got to have a bit of bottle, hasn't he? You know what I mean?
If you think about it, 150 years ago, yeah, a family member of yours secured your name in history.
Uh-huh. Really? Yeah. Yeah.
From boxing.
Yeah.
So, not only were they game guys, this one single man, the smallest heavyweight
ever
forged 150 years later to make his name on primetime sports TV on two of the biggest names in boxing at that time. He got his name brought up.
Can you imagine how big he would have been? It would have been like Tyson Fury or one of them, you know?
Yeah.
It must have been a game fella, you know what I mean? But them's things that we've got to talk about, and you're proud of those things. But when people sort of, that the perception of our family is the Sears family, they're all gangsters, they're all villains.
I
don't make any excuses for any of that, because we're no better or we're no worse than the MPs who you see today.
Mm-hmm.
They're all at the nonsense with expenses and what have you.
Yeah.
Tell me who's straight today. Tell me.
Well, when you sit there and you find yourself in a position like we are with lockdowns and everything, and they're just still carrying on doing what they're doing,
it's only
the fact that they enforce so many rules that's the only reason why they have to show face. Mm. They've been hit with fines.
Yeah.
They ain't going to be paying them. No. They're going to say they're paying them. The money goes to them.
What's the point of paying them? Boris Johnson getting 110 quid fame here? What's that?
Yeah.
That's wrong with drinks.
Yeah.
The point is, they're looked on as being a better kind of person than we are, because we've got a criminal background. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
But people don't look at the other side of the coin, whereas really we're from good working people, you know what I mean? We've all worked very, very hard. How many people would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, work 7 o'clock at night in all kinds of weather? You know,
I've done it for years, mate. Done it for years.
Men after my own heart are exactly the same.
These people who work in offices, if the temperature's not right, they go on strike, don't they?
Yep. But I think that's bred in from schools, because when you go to schools and stuff, if the temperature drops below, then they get to go home.
Yeah.
And then that then goes into, like you say, the offices.
Yeah. That's right.
So then, like, we're not, as a society, we're not breeding men like your
very few
from way back when the ancestors, being on the street in the freezing cold with three coats on. And
people don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So the Sears family moved up to Newcastle, I think, about 1914. This research that I've done, my grandfather moved up. He died in 1964.
Did you have any roots here to start with?
No, I don't think so.
Well, there's a question that you've just asked. I think that we must have had, because I don't think a family from London would have moved up here
so far
if they didn't know anybody up here. So I think we did. We must have had some kind of route.
I think Zeppelin's dropping bombs, the first Blitz.
Yeah, but why move to Newcastle?
Because it's the furthest place to get away from the bombs, I would imagine.
When did the steel and that lot start up here?
Steel.
Yeah.
That's more Middlesbrough concert way. Here's more cool.
You guys would have come up here back then because there was more work there.
Possibly.
Our kind of work was all the street work, you know, always buying and selling on the streets, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but if there's work up here, you've got people buying.
True.
You know, and like you say, you guys are true markers.
Oh, without a doubt.
So if that's the case, you're going to go where the people have got the money in. And the northeast, that was where there was a lot of work. Otherwise, it was getting rid of the damage that was caused from the Blitz and stuff like that, which a lot of people didn't want to do. They prefer to just get down the mines or
like I said, on my granny's side, they're from Ireland, they've come over hundreds of years ago. That's what we've written in the book, Paul. That's what that's more or less about. When my granny came over from Ireland 150 years ago, and she had 9 daughters and 1 boy, so all them daughters married different men. So you've got the Searses and you've got the Kellys and you've got all different branches of the family, but we're all closely related, you know what I mean? So
you would have had for what you was doing with like street marketing and stuff, a lot of the ships and that were built up this way.
That's correct, shipbuilding. Yeah,
there'd be a lot of boats sent and ported here.
Yeah.
So you would have probably got, or your ancestors would have probably got, a lot of the stuff that was brought in from, I don't know, navy that come down.
Possibly, yeah.
Things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, I'd imagine, from a street trading point of view, Newcastle family ties or not, probably would have been quite appealing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I think moving from the slums of the East End, that's got to be a big thing, because they were notorious for breeding grounds for disease, stuff like that. You know, if you've got 5 or 6 kids, only a certain amount of them's going to survive. So
it was built on clay.
Yeah, to move from there up to here, it doesn't sound like a bad thing, does it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It makes you stronger. When you come from poverty, you want to get out of that trap, don't you? Mm. So you've got to work and you've got to go forward, you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, it's not only our family, my family, the Sears family. There's a lot of families like ours that, you know, you're not happy with being at the bottom of the rung. You want to climb there, and you can't do it because you're educated. So you've got to do, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So you've got to do it with your wits and intelligence. And people like us, we're not educated, but we are very, very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to be, because otherwise you don't survive,
My dad, Paul, I'm so thankful my mum and dad are still alive, they're still together. I've got so much to be. I'm blessed. Still together, still married. I've had a fantastic upbringing. And I see some podcasts, certain people, they've had terrible lives as children. They've been dragged up. I think you mentioned before, your brother got killed. You've been in homes, bang, bang, bang. And I look at myself and I go, wow, you know, how would I have handled that? Could I have handled that? I'm not too sure.
To tell you the truth, mate, I haven't really handled it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I when I lost my brother, murder was on my mind.
Yeah.
You know, I did go out looking for the people. I did try and kill four people. These were four people that took my brother's life. I turned up to every one of their houses. They was not there. They left. Mm-hmm. They were in hiding.
Yeah.
I even went to some of the spots. I ran through windows. Like, literally, I ran through double glazing windows because they thought, because they were in their house. It's really hard. So I had to focus on things. And the things I had to focus on was just bringing attention to just the world. And I'm very blessed with mm-hmm. the channel
mm-hmm.
and people like yourselves taking the time out to tell me your family history and just making everyone know, because I always knew there was always the truth behind everyone's rumours.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, and some people might get it right, but you remember. You see, from this, I can tell anyone anything. We've got it proof. It's on camera. This is your story.
Uh-huh.
Your family history.
Yeah.
Your family future.
Uh-huh.
But if you would have told me this in a pub,
mm-hmm.
and then I would have gone to another pub and a week later and been oh, I was with the Sayers. And, and then I've said to them the truth.
Mm-hmm.
By the time they've gone off and told their friend, there's something added to it.
Yeah.
There's something taken away from it.
Yeah.
They then put something in that they think is in play.
They are,
and then the next thing you know, you've got, you know, like when I lived up here, Sayers' name, even in Sunderland, strong,
mm-hmm.
you know.
I think the people that don't like it is because we speak the truth. And if you didn't like the truth, then...
We tend to stick together,
Paul. We're from a big family. That doesn't go down with some people very well, so, you know what I mean? So,
but in any big family, you'll always get people who don't like you, you know.
Because you're from a big family, Paul, that gets changed to mafia. Like, you've just used that word before, mafia.
Yeah.
And it gets changed to something else, or, you know, and it's not like that. We're a big family, we're clannish, we're close. Everybody loves each other. We'll look out for each other. If someone's in trouble, then we'll try and back it up. Do you know what I mean?
I think every family is like that in a way. Do you know? Like, I think if someone was hurting somebody and you were all family, you'd turn up. It's just the way it is.
You're there, aren't you? You've got to be there.
You have to.
I think a lot of families, Paul, today, modern day families, there's a lot of bickering. People don't like each other. Certain people, you know, there's Ricks here and there's Ricks there. I suppose every family's got it. You know, got like Prince Andrew. He's been outcasted for his dirty deeds, you know what I mean? So every family's got it, and, you know, but
our family has as well, to a certain degree. But the majority, 99.9%, we're clannished, and we'll stick together and we'll look out for each other. Do you know what I mean? There's a respect there, which is... Some people
just
do like it, but
it goes to show how strong your family is. That you know, your mum and dad are still staying together forever.
I've got three sons and I've got a daughter. And every time my kids have been in trouble, I'm going to tell you, I live on my own. I live with my two smallest kids. My oldest boys, I'm pleased to see the 32 this year, the twins. If I should say so myself, the handsome lads, the good lads.
They are good looking lads.
Yeah, the good lads, mate. They've got good jobs, mate. They work offshore on the rigs. That makes me so proud, immensely proud.
The straight guys, never been in trouble.
Trying to be a villain today. I tell anybody this, anybody who is even thinking about trying to be a villain. There's cameras everywhere, man.
There's an iron.
You know, they can pinpoint you with electronic things.
You don't want to be a villain, or you don't want to try to be a villain, because it's environmental facts that make you a villain.
I just feel like sometimes when people watch these films, either Goodfellas or certain films, I want to be like that.
I think young kids today look at these films, guys, right? And they think it's a fantastic world
cool.
to be in.
It's cool.
It's not a good world to be in, you know. A lot of my pals have done time, you've done fives and 8 years. Great, great fellas, you know what I mean? But they've been in a position where they've had to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And can we judge them for that? I can't judge them. Because I know for a fact these are good guys. And I know for a fact that the people who make these rules and regulations, they're the bastards.
Mm-hmm.
These MPs
mm-hmm.
and these policemen, I'm not generalising, I'm not saying they're all the same. But a lot of them are.
I think that's good and bad in everybody, isn't it?
A lot of them are. They tell us that we shouldn't be doing what we're doing. You know what I mean?
I don't think, even these days, I don't think you can get real criminals anymore. And I think a lot of kids on social media, they feel like they're criminals because they put a video up and they got a few thousand likes.
Yeah.
And I think, like, long gone the days of the old time guys and girls, because you had the mums that knew how to keep the roof over your head and keep you, like, by fighting your corner, you'd be in trouble and you'd come out and your mum would be like, no, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They'd fight your corner and stuff. But what made it great back in the day is because you had to hustle to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now you don't have to hustle.
No.
Because everything's given to you.
Just one thing that you had in those days was respect.
Mm-hmm.
Today you haven't got respect. You've got these young kids, they'll go around chatting about old women and old men and stealing purses and handbags. It's all for drugs now, isn't it? They're not the kind of villains that we are involved with or we know. Or our people were like that. They never hurt old people. They never hurted kids. They went, all right, they rob a bank, okay. It's good or bad. But that's what kind of people they were.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you look at the American West, Jesse James and them, they did the railroads and the banks because they had all the money.
Yeah.
And they'd been taken off the poor people. And it's the same today. It doesn't change much, you know what I mean?
No.
But the young villains who want to be villains today, first of all, they're involved with drugs, which for me is a very, very bad thing. And then when they've got drugs in them, they do these things, you know. I mean, there was a case the other day, a little girl, God bless her, 12-year-old, a 14-year-old guy stabbed and killed her. He's 14 and he's killed a 12-year-old girl. That never happened in our days. What's changed?
It?
Yeah. Yeah. Recently. 2 days ago, 3 days ago.
Wow.
It never happened in our days. You understand what I mean?
Walking around the city centre now, I was born 65. When I was 1975, when I used to keep watch for Michael Albert, crafting the streets years ago, I never seen people sleeping on the streets or begging. There seems to be hundreds of every street corner you go on round now in Newcastle. I don't know what other cities are like in the UK.
Well, a mutual friend of ours, Terry.
Yeah.
Terry Ellis.
Yeah.
He was talking to me about exactly the same thing, and he thinks that the reason why that is because the system is letting them down.
Yeah.
It's not because they're they're, you know, when they're falling on hard times, yeah, they're not able to do. They haven't got that spirit that you guys had.
Yeah.
You know, when if you was falling on hard times, you would hustle, you'd graft, and that would come about. These people ain't, so they're being let down by the system.
When you speak to some of them, mate, some of them are ex-vets, they fought for the country, they've been in Afghanistan. The ex-vets, they can't get a room or a house anywhere. That you know, they're dying on the streets. Yet, it boils me pissed to think that I'm not having to go at foreigners or anything like that, but people coming across here on boats, mate, they put them in hotels. It's costing the government £5 million per day to keep them in there. Do we get asked about that? No, they just shove your poll tax further up. So you're kind of paying for it. It's like, you've got to shut up. It's getting done, bloody blah, but we're not happy with it. Do you know what I mean?
Back in the day when we weren't happy about anything, we used to unite as,
yeah,
unite as, you know, Brits, and just put our status in there and let everyone know
But that's all frowned upon now, Paul. It's all frowned upon.
But the thing is,
you're the class is racist, or you're a bit, you know, these type of things. It's awful.
We don't get a riot because most of the people that are not interested, because a lot of the people are now multicultural.
Yeah.
They're marrying, they have children with, you know, so they won't get up with you, and they won't stand by you.
No.
They won't cause these riots to show the government.
Yeah.
We're not saying, no, they can't come.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying, let them do their part.
Yeah.
Like Australia, you wouldn't be, they said every single criminal back in the day, to Australia. So down to the prison. They put them on a boat, three months on a boat, out to Australia. They're going. Australia was built on criminals.
That's right.
English criminals.
And Irish. Right?
And Irish. That's English true. And Irish criminals. Australia was built. And now, if I want to go to move to a English country, which they call Australia, even though I have relatives there, because they stayed there after.
Yeah.
When their prison sentence is up, they turn around and say to them, you can either go back home, mm-hmm, or you can stay here. Let's stay there.
Unbelievably, I can't believe, because there was a program on TV called House Through Our Time, and it's a house just around the corner from me. It's been there since the 1800s. It was on TV a while back. They've done certain houses, one in Newcastle, one in Bristol. And the one in Newcastle is a very old house, was owned by such and such. A doctor finished up owning it. But two little boys, who was 11 year old or something, now they pinched a brolly out of the passageway. And they got tucked down to that moot hole facing the hotel what you were stopping in. And they put them downstairs into the tunnel. They got sentenced to 7 years apiece in Australia. And two kids getting sent to Australia, mate.
Wow.
I found it unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I think one of them actually, when they'd looked into it, one of them actually made his way back to this country years and years later. But the other one, they kind of lost touch with him. And it makes me wonder that years ago, if you stole coal, you got birched or something like that, you know, terrible things they've done to you, bad for pinching things years ago, just to keep yourself warm, or to feed your kids or whatever. And how much the laws have gone soft now compared to back then. Yeah. I was reading the other day, uncle, and I was something on TV the other day. There was a couple that killed a kid, a little baby, and they got 7 years apiece. Mate, they would have strung you up years ago for that, man. They would have fucking strung you up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just think it's not, mate, and the price of gas and electric and fuel and blah, blah, the country's just not a good place to live anymore, if I'm being honest.
It's not a case of doing things now to, it's hard to live now, you know, even though we've got the luxuries and we've got everything that we could possibly have at the tip of our fingers. Yeah. We were just talking about mobile phones before. Yeah. Everything is with us at the tip of our fingers. Mm-hmm. For some reason, even though the world has become richer.
Yeah.
How have we got poorer?
Mm-hmm.
They've just hid everything.
Mm-hmm.
Where before everything was just obvious, it was poor. Now we're poor as a country, but we look rich. You look outside, you know, like.
But if you're spending £5 million a day on that, and you're sending £120 million to Ukraine, I mean, God love them people in Ukraine. I would hate to be there as well. The state the world's in, but send money there. I think we're sending money to India. We're sending money all over the place. And there was a story we used to get to, where charity begins at home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you should, that's...
You think about it now, right? This, I have to say, this is the strangest place, for starters, I've ever done a podcast in.
Yeah.
Tell us where we are.
We're upstairs, and there's a friend of mine.
100 yards from Newcastle United Football
Ground. Right, well, Newcastle United Football Ground's just there. Well said, Alan. It's St James's Park's just around the corner. This is actually called Barkhorn Stonehouse, and my friend has a little... he's an Italian guy, and he has a little coffee shop in the corner of it.
Uh-huh.
It's called One Oak, and it's Oak stands for one of a kind.
Yeah.
So that's why he's called One Oak. He's a lovely guy, Rossano. We've had a glass of wine today with him and a bottle of water, and he's given us some Welsh rarebit, which my Uncle Albert thought was Welsh rabbit. And he's just kind of take the ears off it. But we've had a lovely day today, and it's just one an unusual place for it. And now the light's good for it, and we've got the nicest of furniture.
The reason why I brought this up, is definitely the weirdest place I've ever done a podcast in. But can you imagine, way back then, talking about the riches of today, where we've made it to look rich, that you're sitting on a sofa that is for sale in this shop, with a price tag, £1,245. This is the sofa you're sitting on. How does that make you feel from being on the streets trying to make, five bob?
Crazy.
Crazy. To now sitting on a sofa that, what would you have had to do to make £1,245?
It's just unbelievable, isn't it?
You know?
It's a month's wage, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying.
It's more than a month's wages.
And this is what we're doing. We're hiding the fact that the world is still the same to what it was when you were doing your thing.
Yeah.
But we look comfortable. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much this chair is. That table's £500. This sofa over a grand.
It's proper money.
Much as a quarter.
Much as a They've took half that chair away and doubled the price. Right, so this is £1,739.
It's unbelievable.
And I'm as uncomfortable as hell.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's a comfy chair, that.
It's because you've been fine.
All right, that's
do you understand what I'm saying?
Of course,
like, you've put so much graft in to your history that if you don't put this message out there, people are forgetting because new cultures are coming in.
Yeah.
And all we're worried about is everything from other countries, like what you said, you know, sending the money out to Ukraine and doing that. Yeah. That we're slowly, people that haven't lived what you've grown up to be, people are forgetting that.
Yeah. There's millions of people objecting that we know, but they're scared to say anything, Paul. They're scared to say anything because you get classed as a racist or a bigot or whatever. There's so many new words that have come up with now to call you if you don't agree with the system and go along with it. Man, that's what they do. But everything's just going
Johnny, we've never agreed with the system. Because there's always been the system and there's been us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean when you say that?
Well, the system is all, for me, I've never had any sort of, you know, the system is as crooked as what we are supposed to be.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Look at your role models. You've got your MPs. Most of them's all crooked, one way or another.
Yeah.
And they're telling us that we should be doing things. They're doing what we shouldn't be doing. You understand?
Yeah, the opposite. I totally understand.
Well, so, Boris Johnson made them laws, and look what's happened.
It's so hypocritical. Look at the flaws that they found with the police now. You know, when we were kids, we thought, oh, the police, everything they did was right, and they were very honourable people. I'm not going to generalise, but now look at all the flaws and cracks they found with the police.
Mm-hmm.
Times when they should have prosecuted, but they didn't.
Yeah.
People who are done for sex offences against kids, and they go to court and they give them an easy option, they end up doing 4 or 5 months in prison.
Mm-hmm.
But we do something, for instance, a robbery of some kind, and they give you 15 years.
Yeah.
How does it work out? It's not fair, is it?
No, 100%.
You know?
I think
the system is not fair, and it never has been.
Mm. And the cracks are starting to show with that.
And they're starting to show now. They never showed before.
No.
But now they're starting to show. People's beginning to ask questions, and they're saying, that's not right. I want you to answer that.
And do you know what it is, yeah? The other thing that I've noticed when it comes to, see when a police officer does wrong, yeah? Now, you, like myself, will know a lot of people behind the door in prison.
Yeah, right? Of course.
Now, you've had some police officers from your neck of the wood here
mm-hmm.
that has gone to prison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Down my end, exactly the same. We've had police officers mm-hmm. going to prison, London, things like this, right? Yeah. When they go to prison, how comes the people in prison have never bumped into these coppers?
Because they're doing nonsense wings, weren't they?
Will they? Because there's some high-profile people that are character witnesses against big names. They put them on the nonce wing as well.
They do, yeah.
Yeah? So how can these people never bump into them? Because I believe that these guys are not going to jail. Mm-hmm. I believe because they're protected. They'll say they're going to jail. They'll move them off, give them a new name, put them in a new area.
They are protected,
Because have you listen? You tell me. Have you honestly heard that you've known anyone that spent time with a copper in jail?
No, never.
Where are they putting them?
Never.
There must be somewhere for them. Paul is going to be. There must be a
change of name. New. Yeah.
Paul in the '60s. You and I were talking about the West End of London. Mm-hmm. You go down Berwick Street, Soho. All them coppers were bent down there in the '60s. They were all taking the bung.
Because they got paid so little, didn't they? That doesn't
make any difference. It's supposed to be honourable people. They were all taking the bung. Loads of them were taking it. And that was all covered up, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, now we know about it. But in the 60s, you didn't know about it. They were all bent. They're as bent as our family are bent, or any criminal family in England is bent, supposedly bent. They're worse than us because they're hypocritical. We're not hypocrites. Mm-hmm. We say what we are.
Yeah.
And if you like it or you don't like it, that's
the way we're flying.
That's the way it is.
And some people would say that the politicians, the police, the royal family are the biggest mafia in the world.
Of course.
You know?
You've only got to look at Prince Andrew, for instance. What a diabolical liberty.
Yeah.
He's taken liberties with young girls all of his life. He's basically a paedophile, really.
I podcasted an ex-paedophile hunter, police officer.
Yeah.
And John Wedgner. And he uncovered him way before.
Did he?
Yeah.
And the police told him he had to...
Forget about it.
Bury that, act like you haven't seen it.
That's it.
That's on a podcast that I have on my channel.
So he gives this girl 12 million, but I haven't done anything. I'm not guilty of anything. And then he turns around and says, what I want to do now, I want to help girls who have been abused by men. what kind of guy is this? What kind of intelligence has he got? You know,
I think it's easy to give away somebody else's money, right? Yeah?
Well,
this is our definitely. Money he's given away. The guy, it's his money, it's our money.
It's mummy's money.
The guy, the
which
thing,
comes from
it's mummy's money.
Yeah,
the likes, you know?
The guy has been an offender. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And now he's been caught out.
So getting back to where we're from, Paul, anyway. We've went off into politics, but my old man years ago when I was a kid, one of my earliest memories was grafting the barra, working the barra as a streets before 1981. I'm talking the 70s when Greer's Monument is a big monument in the centre of Newcastle, Earl Greer. My dad used to have a barra outside of there. When I used to come from school, which is an oyster shell, Liam used to walk down virtually city centre the school was in. We used to walk down there, my dad would be packing away, putting his stuff in the van. If the old Bill come, he used to just hedge up and put the barra in the corner somewhere and pretend you weren't working. But I remember my earliest memories was my dad would cash up and all the pennies and half pennies, we used to have half pennies back then, he'd put them on the bank and say, you have them, son. Earliest memories this was. And I'd go back home with like £1.20, £1.25 in half pennies and pennies.
How old was you?
About 7, 8 years old. I'm talking 1973, 74. I remember when Sunderland won the cup that year and the year later, I think we went to Wembley, Newcastle went. We got stuffed off Liverpool 3-0. But then memories come back as a child. And as you got a little bit older, I've got cousins who are all relatively the same age. John, Stephen, Michael, my brother Peter. We didn't break the law, if I'm being honest. We kind of bent the laws a little bit. Never really worked ourselves. We always had that mentality. We used to go and get these tomato trays, which were empty tomato trays, and sell them to they were like wooden boxes from Holland. And you get 2 pence and 3 pence, and then we used to go up and price all the time and sell them to the flower places in the green market and the flower markets. And we always went home with 5, 6, maybe a 10 in your pocket as a kid back in them days.
That's a lot of money, yeah.
That was a lot of money, mate. Yeah. And what are you spending on? You just try and save up. You bought yourself some plimsolls, baseball boots were the job then, or airwear came out. Airwear, remember airwear?
Yeah, yeah.
And people used to wear riding boots back in them days. But and I remember Uncle Albert grafting the suitcase. You'd open the suitcase, you sell a bit of jewellery, and you had certain people, like I remember when Del Boy was selling one of them back repair kits, and Uncle Albert came in, and he rubbed his back. Yeah. Well, them were called Rickens. Rickens, them were called.
They were called G's, actually.
G's are Rickens. We called Rickens. But you come in, he was part of the firm, so when you send a bit of jewellery, you say bum bum. He would want, once somebody made a purchase, then somebody else would do it, somebody else would. It took a few quid, you know what I mean? So we used to keep watching outside of the Clock Bar on Clayton Street. It used to be really busy back then, the town. But since then, Paul, they've built Americanized Silver Link Metro Centre. They've built different places now. So people tend to drive to these places because you can't get park in the city centre anymore. Yeah. And so the town is really, it's been strangled. It's the council want to take a good look at themselves because it's kind of strangled in the town and people just don't. It wasn't like years ago. There's more pubs and restaurants in the town now, and people come for a drink. If I go out on a Saturday night, which I like to now, I've kind of been stuck. I've got my two kids living with us, Paul, which I'm a single parent and I have my two kids living with us since 2012. So they've been living with me 10 years. Nancy leaves school this weekend. I don't know where that time's gone, but I've kind of put my life on hold to look after my children for that long and just kind of worked. I don't do 12-hour shifts anymore, more part-time-ish at the minute. And try and take it easy a little bit more and look after my kids, which is a bit of a difficult job. My weekends are taken up by washing and ironing. Can you believe this? Washing and ironing and cooking Sunday dinners. And so I've kind of shelved my life for about 10 years now. But like I say, my kids are a bit more independent, which I'm really, really pleased about. And me, well,
I'm scared about it.
Really, well,
Paul,
like time goes by so quickly, Paul, if I'm being honest.
My daughter's 15 now and she's very independent. Yeah. And I'm like, wow. Oh.
Paul, I read a lot of books. I haven't got much else to do at my age. Yeah. This book here is a fantastic book. One of the reasons is because I'm mentioning it. I'm going to show you something. That's when we got the licenses in 81, which was a big celebration.
Are you in this picture?
This is Albert Heergraff in London, Hampstead Heath, with the balloons.
And that's me at Hampstead Heath, working what we used to call the big balloon at that time.
I used
time.
To get on Hampstead Heath when I was younger, yeah.
Really?
So I'll get these pictures, yeah. I'll put them up.
This is my brother Peter Rocky Graziano. Who's
my dad.
He was middleweight champion of the world, Graziano was. Yeah. Yeah, somebody up there likes me. You ever seen that film, Paul Newman? This is me and my missus working my barra that I used to work. Now, that barra there is in the museum now in Beamish.
Beamish Museum? Yeah, Beamish.
The original barra is over there.
That barra is there now. And that's when we used to work the barra together.
Did you have the barra right up till they got it?
Up till when?
No, you got another one, didn't you? You got a stall after that.
That was the one
he'd worked for years. Yeah. He worked for years.
You gave it to Beamish?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I said, the one proviso was, I said, you keep the name there. Can you see the name there? Albert Sayers. And family, yeah. And so that
I would have seen this. I would have seen this barrel.
Have you been in there?
Yeah, of course. I took my kids, my daughters, because I used to live up here.
Right.
So my daughters, like when I'd left, my kids stayed up here.
I used to deliver fruit and vegetables there every morning. I used to go and have a look around when it was empty.
Yeah.
A little guy called Danny used to let us in and take the stuff upstairs.
Oh wow!
But marvelous place. I love all the history, Northeast history.
Have you got a copy of this book?
No, I'm going to get one.
Right, you're going to get one.
Do you know how much they are?
It doesn't.
Oh, that's
Paul, look, I'm going to show
you.
Doubled
the price of collector's items.
This is an old family photograph of all my mother, and that's my grandmother from London there, Esther, she was.
So this one's your mum?
No, that's my grandmother, Esther.
Esther was a Frummer, Paul.
She was a Jewish lady, and because we've got Jewish on my dad's side.
Yeah.
And Irish on my mum's side. That's a bit of a mix.
So you've got your tempers from the Irish and the hard work from the Jewish. Yeah,
so.
I don't know.
And my mum's there somewhere. But can you see how they're beautifully done with the fur coats?
I was
going to
say, they look very elegant. Yeah.
And that was in the 30s. There.
So all them married, Paul, all them ladies there, all married different men with different names, and hence you get a big family, do you know what I mean?
So is this the street you lived on, or is this the street you traded on?
I'm not sure where it was taken.
This is Nelson Street, which is just around the corner.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is Nelson Street.
This is next to the Granger Market, which is still there. it's all pedestrianised. You're not really supposed to drive around there.
So if anybody wants to know about the family, they've got to get that book.
Oh, I'll make sure. Guys, this book, no joke. Where can I get it from?
There's a shop called The Back Page. There's one in Gateshead, and there's a one in Newcastle on St Andrew Street.
Oh,
they've got them, and I've got some as well. I've got a couple left at home, so
yeah,
I can sign a few copies. But I have to say, Paul, if anybody actually reads this book, it would make an absolute fantastic film, if I'm being honest, because they come over on the boat.
I was going to say
from Ireland, but I think it will be a multi-million pound film, because you go back hundreds, 150 years from Ireland, and it just brings you up to date to the 30s, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s.
I'm
the
surprised 50s. No one's approached you.
Me, Uncle Albert's grandfather.
Well, I think the reason for that is it hasn't been advertised enough.
Okay.
My granny's husband was Billy Fleming. He actually fought in the First World War, and actually got bayoneted by a German. But he actually survived it, and he got bayoneted in the back, and he actually survived it and came back. The street now called Stowell Street, which is Chinatown, which is just around the corner from here. A lot of our aunties and uncles were born on that street back in the day, in the 30s. And then to take you through the war years and to bring you up to date through the 60s, when my uncle Frankie, like the 60s, was in there, there's a chapter about the career. Reg Cray coming to Newcastle, and then through the 70s and 80s, about what my Uncle Albus mentioned there, about the street trading through the 70s, when it was illegal, then 1981, when it became legal. My great-grandmother lived till she was 89, almost 90, so she had a right good innings, and I knew her. She passed away when I was 12 in 1977. But then through the 80s, Paul, there's a mention of the ecstasy days where drugs come along, and it was like the late 90s. Crime took a bit of it rocketed in the West End of Newcastle, where we're from. It kind of rocketed, you know. There was lots of villains. And for all that my dad had fruit shops, I kind of went down the little road where I shouldn't have been going down. And my cousin, an actual cousin of mine, got killed in a shootout in the Big Market. And when he passed away, when he got shot and killed, Paul, I think it was 95, Christmas 95, we went to church, and the church was ram-packed. And Father Cunningham, Seamus Cunningham, was
He ended up being a bishop,
he went on to become the bishop, you know. And when he seen this church packed with villains, and this is where my life completely changed. You mentioned before, but your brother. He simply said, "You live by the sword," because Frankie was a villain. You know, he was a. I used to graft with the kid, if I'm being honest, at the jump ups, kind of chewing cigarettes. And the money that you got, Paul, never ever really got spent on anything good. If I'm being honest, you just bought new trainers.
So what did he say, the bishop?
Anyway, the bishop had turned around and said, "If you live by the sword, you die by the sword." And his two kids was crying in front of me, and it absolutely broke my heart. And I thought then, and my dad just said to me, "Please don't do that. I don't want you. I've got, if you want anything, you've got to ask us. I've got fruit shops. We've got money." It's not, and it wasn't like I was skint.
Yeah.
It was more of a fun factor, Paul. Does that make sense? Yeah. It was more of a fun factor. Let's go and do this and go and do that. It was more of a fun thing. And then one day I just like kind of twirled. I went, and my dad as well, when my dad was in 19, I was born 65. My granddad had passed away in December 64, which was my Uncle Albert's dad. My dad was in Winsome Green Prison as a 21-year-old, and he got let out for an hour to come and see the funeral, and he went back, and I just realised how much that broke my old man's heart, getting let out for 1 hour, and my father idolised his dad, as I idolised my dad as well. I was just talking to Chris Lambriano the other day, and I read his book. I tend to buy a book when I go on holiday, you know, and I bought Chris's book. Lovely fella, Chris. And I read in there that when he'd done what he'd done and stuck by the craze and got 15 years shoved up his arse, it actually, he broke his father's heart, and his father used to travel up and down the country to all these nicks, Durham, Parkhurst, all these different jails. He went to see him, and actually, he's still today. Chris is in his 80s now, I think, maybe 80.
He will be. Yeah.
He is, and a lovely fella. I was on the phone the other day, and I says, "If you ever come to this," because his mum's from Consett,
I think Steve had put some flowers on that grave. I says, if I come up, I says, come up, we'll take you for a food, but food, and you know what I mean? But it broke his father's heart, and I didn't want to break my father's heart like that. So from nearly going down that avenue of being a criminal, I kind of went back on the straight and narrow, back to work. I've worked with some good kids. You meet good kids. And I think when you work for a few quid, Paul, you appreciate them more. Mm-hmm. You can buy a car. You can buy a nice car. You can buy a house. You can buy nice things. You know, you can sleep in your bed, sleep for your night. You know, he's going to come and crash your door in. And so that makes me so proud of my children, that my two twins have got good jobs. They've gone nice holidays. They've got nice watches and things like that, you know. As I get older now, this is going to sound weird, but money doesn't really bother that me anymore.
I think that's the case a lot of the time.
Money never bothers you until you haven't got it.
I think when you're young, Paul, when you're younger, you want watches, nice cars, nice bullets.
I've been skint, and I've had money. I'd rather have money.
Yeah, I know, but to be skint, it's not a sin to be skint, Paul. Sin to be skint. It's a sin if you didn't try. It's a sin if you don't try, but it's not a sin to be skint, mate.
Yeah. No.
Get off your arse and go and do so. I've seen some beggars down there. You can tell they're not real beggars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like saying, get off your arse and go and do something. You know what I mean?
Some of these guys are on £200 a day.
Yeah, I know that. I see them they run into McDonald's and Burger King at night time, 6 o'clock. And they go, much you made the day, much you got me. And they go and cash up and they go, you know what I mean?
So they were telling me about one guy. If he works on a Saturday and he works sort of through the day and he goes to, what's that place in Gallagher? What's it called?
The
arena or whatever it's called in Gallagher. There's a big complex there.
I don't know that.
Says you make £500 a day.
So
then you've got to walk through the streets and you want to give somebody something because you think he could be genuine, but then you say to yourself,
for a massive stage of handing money over to a lot of homeless people.
Yeah.
Now, doesn't work, honestly.
Walk into a shop, buy the food, and give it to
them. Yeah.
That's what I do.
But you know what it is, Paul? You know if they want to buy a bit of tobacco or a spliff or something. You know, if that's what they want to do with the
just
money,
just say it.
In
Vegas, there's people with signs in front of them saying, please give me some money. All I want to do is buy weed.
I want a spliff.
And you just think to yourself, do you know what?
It's being honest.
There you go. Yeah,
you're honest as a day as long. It's being honest. That's true.
So
like I say, Paul, sorry to stop you. Like I say, as you get a little bit older, having your health on your side and having your kids happy, and I've still got my mum and dad, I've got lots to be, I'm blessed, you know, I've got a lot to be happy about me, if I'm being honest. So making a few quid isn't the be all and end all, you know what I mean? I've got a roof over my head, got my two kids living with us, everybody's healthy, everybody's happy. If my kids are happy, then I'm happy. You know what I'm saying, mate?
I think deep down, if you work out the difference between being rich, is we're led to believe that money is what makes us rich. But then you can have money and have nothing.
I feel such a wealthy man, Paul, that I've got four handsome kids.
Yeah.
And
that's true wealth, you know, health, happiness within
health
your
is
family,
your wealth.
Unity.
Health is your wealth, mate, 100%.
And trust, all things that are free.
They come before money.
My dad's had a stroke now a couple of years ago, bless him. But I can still talk to him and talk to you, you know. He's got a touch of the palsy, Bill, Bell's palsy. I know you mentioned earlier on about you.
I had a little bit of a stroke. Luckily, I never had the face, face drop.
Yeah, well,
my arm and my legs are.
Yeah, he's. We're getting slung out. So, like I say, Paul, getting back to the book, mate, the Breed Apart, mate, this book here is a fantastic. I suggest anybody buy it. I didn't want to put a spoiler on, but that's a great book. There's a good friend of mine from London who's been in prison. He's done 21
wrongly
years.
Wrongly accused.
He was on TV the night about a programme at Belmarsh. And that's Kevin Lane's book. Good friend of mine, a lovely fella.
I've got a lot of love for
Fitted Up and Fighting Back. He's a lovely, lovely kid.
You know Karen?
We've done podcasts. I've actually been to his house.
I fancy this to get made into a film.
Yeah.
And this would be a fantastic film. I suggest anybody buy that book.
Truly make an amazing film.
Oh, absolutely brilliant. And last but not least, a good pal of mine, Terry Ellis.
We were on the phone to him before because
he didn't realise that I knew him. Terry's wrote a cracking book and he's a lovely, lovely kid.
He's actually wrote 11 books,
that's called Living with the Beasts.
Yeah.
And that's a cracking read. I don't know where this book's come from, We are the Geordies. I don't know where that one's coming from. I think that's part of the fixtures and fittings in this place where we're at, mate, if I'm being honest. But yeah, three cracking books there, mate, if I'm being honest. Excuse me.
Paul, to summarise everything, a great Irish writer, and I read a lot of books, and he said, notoriety is the evil twin to fame. And I think that sums us up, doesn't it?
Yeah, I like that. I've never heard that before. I like that. Say that again.
Notoriety is the evil twin to fame, by Oscar Wilde.
I like that. I like that.
And Oscar Wilde also said, some of them might be in the gutter, but we're looking up at the stars. I think he said that as well, didn't he?
He did.
So it is not all that bad, is it?
Where's the future for the Sayers, for you guys? What's the next step for you guys?
Paul, if my children are happy, then I'm happy. Seriously, I'm happy. Like I say, my mum and dad, they're 78 now, still together. You know, me and my uncle, when I get a bit of time off work, we just go for a bottle of wine, we have a bit of food, and we have a cracking time. I'm back in the house for 4 o'clock, if I'm being honest. But sometimes friends come from... A couple of years ago, Steve, about 10 years ago, Steve Wraith had invited me down to a premiere in London. This was in 2010. And my girlfriend at the time, that was a car, and I went down with the twins. What a fantastic time. Met some right faces. Roy Shaw was alive then. We shook hands with Roy Shaw.
Different people.
Met some real nice people. Anyway, we finished up going to... So now and again, I get invited back to Blind Beggars. And like I've mentioned before, we're from the East End of London, so I kind of go down there with the, you know, I look around and I'll
go down to Blind Beggar as well. We was there literally about a month ago with Tommy Jitterbow, Michael Emmett, Maureen Flanagan.
Yes. Maureen sent me a lovely book. Maureen's a lovely lady.
She is a lovely lady.
Yeah, sent me a signed book, beautiful redder book, fantastic.
I'm so happy that she got over cancer.
Yeah,
100%. You know, she's in remission now.
That's a great thing. You get over that.
And do you know what? She has got
that's a proper
hell
battle.
Of a story. Yeah. A hell of a story.
Well, you know, we've all got a story to tell, mate. It's the way we tell it, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree.
And when I read, I met Chris Lambriano down there, and his brother Jimmy was there. Had a big crack with them, had a crack in town. Finished up back in Fred, an exclusive couple of people. Because I know he doesn't let any Tom, Dick and Harry in, but we finished up in Fred Foreman's. I don't want to be name-dropping, but we finished up in Fred Foreman's flat and had a cracking time with Fred. Lovely old fellas. This was a while ago. But went back down for his birth, got invited to his birthday party when he was 85. I think he's more 90 now.
Wow.
Not in the best of health, but I was sending my regards to Fred, you know. If you're watching there, God bless you, Fred.
Yeah, God bless you, Fred.
Lovely fella. Good one, Fred. Speaks to him on the telephone quite a bit.
You're talking about a villain from bygone days. They were proper villains, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They had respect, they had boundaries, they didn't cross certain lines, you know what I mean?
If you can be a villain, because we realise this, Alan, we realise this, you can be a villain and be a good guy.
Yes, true.
Is there such a thing?
Because I think when some people use the word villain, they use it in a terminology where it gains power. But I think... when people are called villains, it could be because you're a survivor.
Yeah.
You're surviving. So you get classed as a villain. But it doesn't mean that you're a bad one. It just means you've done what you had to do.
I'm going to give you another quote here that you like.
Go on, then.
For the Merchant of Venice, Shakespeare. He said...
Mamma mia.
He said, a good man's deeds are remembered when he dies. A bad man's good deeds are interred with his bones. Fact, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, Paul, we're getting slung out.
Okay, come on.
We are getting slung out.
Now, I tell you.
And that brings us literally to the end.
If I can be honest with you, Paul, I have a million more stories to want to tell you.
Right. But Nish didn't know.
If you want to do it another time.
We are definitely doing a part
110%. We'll do another time because it's the first podcast I've ever told.
Yeah, and I'm really honoured that you gave me and my channel.
Yeah, I just want to put some positivity out there because I see these podcasters do these things. He's having a pop at him, and he's having a pop at him, and he's having a pop at that one. He's calling him a nonsense, slack, blah blah blah. That's all negative crap. When I see that on TV, I didn't want to watch that. It's all just proper horrible, and it's negative, and it doesn't bode well. I'm just trying to put some positive, mate, health, happiness, plod on, man. Life's as if life isn't hard enough.
Yeah, live for today, not tomorrow.
That's it. Mate, exactly. That's exactly it, Paul.
That's exactly it, Paul.
Paul, thank you.
No, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Been a pleasure.
And we're definitely doing a part two.
Yeah. Okay, Paul. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Like I say, guys, before we go.
Thank you, Jamie.
Breed apart, crack and read. Needs to be made into a film. Needs to be made into a film. And I hope that I can get a part in it.
Yeah, I'll be the one sitting in the background.
I fancy myself as being an actor.
Let's do it.
I can do the Cockney thing.
You can.
I can do the American thing.
He's a frustrated actor.
That's what it probably is like. There's an actor in there, Paul, don't get out.
Brilliant, lads. Thank you so much.
Thanks again, mate.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Thanks, Sean.
Excellent.
Thank you.